I'm interviewing Mr. Charles Estes of Sperryville, who had been a sawmill operator, correct?
That's right, sawmill in Orchard, Palmer.
In the Piney River?
Just on Piney River, yeah, just a sawmill and stave mill up there.
Oh, you had a stave mill too?
Moved the stave mill in first.
There was one thing I've been wondering. Did you own the property?
No, my father did.
Well, I mean, it was in your family.
Yeah, it was in a, yeah.
Do you know where they bought it from? Did they maybe buy it from the Thorntons?
No, they bought it from the Folds, I think.
Mm-hmm.
My father and John J. Miller went together and bought their place.
How many acres was it?
I think it was 165, somewhere around that.
Uh-huh.
They bought it and peeled a tan bark off of it.
Yeah.
And they had a little sawmill and sawed some too, but see, the tan bark went to the tannery then, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For tanning the hides and stuff with.
Right. Now, was it a portable sawmill, one of these that you could move from one place to another?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you employ other people?
Oh, yeah, I had a big sawmill. We had Jim Nate work for us.
Were they mountain people?
Yeah, most all of them were.
Do you recall their names?
Go get the book in there, 1926.
You've got their names
sure,
in your book?
Sure, I got the book and then what I paid and everything.
Oh.
I was paying $1.50 a day in bold when the farmers right here was paying 75 cents. See, we had a farm and a store and a grist mill. You know, the old Woodish Mill. My daddy bought that place in 1895.
Great. And then when you you were a miller.
I had many bushels of meal and corn and everything.
Would the people pay you?
Sure.
Well, I say it starts, what's that, 1926. Yeah, the name.
Okay, Curly Frazier.
Curly Frazier, he was raised up here in Frazier Hollow. Harry Clatterbuck, he lived on an old house at Piney Run at the sawmill.
From the very top of the mountain down Piney Run, all the way down.
You know where number 12 camp is?
Yeah.
Well, it's down below the Pole Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
See, old Dr. Kelly owned a lot of land in there.
Oh, yeah.
He owned a lot of land.
Uh-huh.
And my daddy joined him and Bernard Bowen on one side and Advise on the other.
Oh.
And Pine Run comes down this ravine here.
We'll go over it with the map in a little while.
And see, this side of the mountain, this side of the mountain, Bernard Bowen lived on. This side, Advise, and the head of it was Dr. Kelly.
Okay. Now, Bob Fry.
Bob Fry, he was, he comes up in there around Turn Bridge, originally.
Mm.
But he did, too. Most all them people working me up there did. Now.
Sure. Lester Harrison. Payne.
Lester Payne.
Did he, was he a mountain fellow?
Yeah, Payne, all the Paynes are right above you.
Okay, and so now, like Harry Clatterbuck, for 3.5 days work got $7.
Yeah, that's right.
Gee.
Well, you're going down ahead to Will Clatterbuck and Jim Clatterbuck from Browntown. They'd walk across the mountain to work every week. Walk from Browntown over there.
Up the mountain and
up, down? Yeah, and see, I was cooked, and I had a little four-room house I built. There was a four-room house up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I built a nice little four-room house, and I cooked, and I did 7 and 8. Hi guys. I worked from 4 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night. When I wasn't at work for cooking, I was hauling stuff out.
What time would they show up for work after walking from Browntown?
7 o'clock in the morning.
What time would they leave in the morning?
See, they stayed with me or boarded down the holler. I was some of them, more than two of them. The two of them stayed with me.
I get it. Uh-huh. Yeah. Now, these mountain people, had they had much education?
Well, I'd say one of them, especially one, didn't have much education, but he's the wittiest person you ever talked to in your life, because he did. I doubt if Ashby, had Ashby Clatterbuck. Thinks in his first name.
Can't see
but
him on here.
you couldn't say anything to him. He didn't have an answer for it just like that. He didn't have to wait to think about it.
Oh, well, I'm not saying that having no education means that a person
was
stupid.
No, but I said, no, he was a, most of them up here was educated.
Did they go to school?
Well, yeah, they went to school. They had school, the Sycamore School and the Hull School.
Yeah.
Her sister Virginia taught school up there.
Go ahead.
Pete?
So there were plenty of schools dotted throughout this area.
Yeah, they had a school on the Hazel, and they had the Atkintown School up this toward the Turning Bridge, and they had a school up on the side of the mountain there, the first quarry. I mean, coming down the mountain on the left was an old quarry, right down below there over the bank was a schoolhouse.
Okay.
I knew the lady taught school there.
Really?
He was down on the road,
uh-huh.
And some of these damn rascals was hauling across from, excuse me, wasn't one of them hauling buggies in. They went by and they called upon the school and put a board on the flue to keep the smoke from coming out and smoked them all out of the room. They told that tale and they said it was really
sure. Did you live in Sperryville? Or, where did you consider your home?
My home, where I was born and raised, is up there. You know where the old mill is? You know where the old mill is? That's
mm-hmm.
where Pete lives?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the old big house out there to the left on the road in that store there.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I was born and raised, right there.
And so whenever you had any free time, you went back there, right? Or did you stay in the mountains?
Yeah, no, I'd always help my daddy to pack apples, tend to the apples and make hay and stuff like that and cut corn.
Oh,
we
yeah.
would take off for that, you see.
What kind of apples did you raise?
All kinds.
Milam?
I'll go tell Pete and I'll be right back.
All right. Yeah, the old time apples, we never did pack any milams. We had milams and russets and all kind of old varieties.
What did you do with the apples?
Oh, we exported them. I mean,
you sold them?
Yeah, we sold them. We had 30 acres orchard.
Wow.
It's still 25 acres over there now. That orchard was set out in 1910, and I was born and raised in that orchard. I tend to it all my life, hip to. And over 50% of them trees are still in that orchard and are dying today. So help me God, you can go back, you look up, and you can't see that orchard from one place unless you get on the other side of the road up on the side of the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
But it's perfect orchard land.
Yeah.
It drains three ways. That's what you want, air draining.
Yeah.
It drains to the river, it drains to the east, it drains to the west, just like the top of your hand.
Oh.
Or they never did freeze out in there.
No.
See, the air drainage is because of that, the frost. Frost is what freezes up, it's not
that. Did, with your mill, did you charge, did they pay you for grinding the mill, or did you take apart?
We told it, and that someone would pay, and someone would be told, but you told it that.
All right. Now, did they bring it from, like, Nicholson Hollow
Nicholson
to you?
Nicholson, Hazel, Atkintown, all around, everywhere.
How would they bring it in?
Well, horseback and on the back, too. They carry a lot on the back. In other words, they towed it. They put a two bushel sack of meal on the back and carried it by guys to the foot of the Hazel. Over John Fillmore Jenkins' place, it's the foot of the Hazel over on the Hazel River.
This takes amazing strength, doesn't it?
Oh, my, they were strong. You take that book, old Charlie said, well, he carried a corner cupboard or something from Blue Ray by guys to Nicholas Hall, they were sitting it down there with his plane. You remember old man George Pollock?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Did you have anything much to do with Pollock?
Oh, I already not did.
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Did you go to any of his parties?
Who?
Pollock's parties.
I've been down in Washington City, down at Waterman Park Hotel, and he had a dining room as long as these two rooms and a table in there, just so you get around, about twice as wide as this.
Uh-huh.
You remember Hump Bradford, I know.
Yeah.
Right. Well, he takes care of the horses, old man, Pollock is styling.
Yeah.
And I got old Hump down there one time to Washington to see old man Pollock. And you know, seen too much liquor and something to eat all your life. But he used to come up there, you know.
Yeah.
And I owned Cab Inn over there and run it for years. and made good money there. I built it. Built every bit of it.
Built every bit of what?
Cab Inn. That restaurant. And
really?
And the motel. Yeah. And he would stop in Warrington. And we had this colored woman, Susie Majors, the cook. And he'd stop in Warrington and call and want to talk to Susie. And they'd tell Susie how he wanted his chickens fixed. He had his little dog and his horn, and she was long then. I mean, the old woman, she was about crazy. But she'd be with him. And he'd want two or three chickens cooked or fried, however he wanted them. Susie would fix them. In the back, I had a river dammed up and had a bunch of trout in there. I had some trout in there 19 inches long, old brood trout. I got them through Highbury when he was the governor of Virginia. I met the truck at Luray and got them off the truck in Luray. I got 500 rainbow trout and 700 brook trout. And that was the last fish that was ever put in that run over there.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's the old rainbow trout, the old big trout, you know.
Yes.
Then he'd get out there and had some ducks on there that had it dammed up. It was really pretty. And we had these white ducks. And he'd blow his horn, you know. Excuse me. He'd blow his little horn.
You were talking about Pollock. And did you ever go to any of his parties up there at Skyland?
No, I can't say. I was up Skyland to several dances, but I don't say it was one of his parties.
Mm.
But you cut the thing over, I tell you. The woman Joy says, Susie, that he loved around the neck, you know, this old big fat nigger cook woman. Said, I'm going to tip you today. I'm going to give you a good tip. He gave her a nickel.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, he didn't really have much money.
No, he didn't.
He was just barely.
Well, I reckon the smartest thing he ever did, him and Will
That's
Carson.
That's going to go on the tape.
Well, him and Will Carson was to get this park started.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
Yeah.
He did it. You used to haul things up for the CCCs, didn't you?
I hauled CC boys before they go and put the trucks in there to haul them.
Yeah.
And I also bought one of the 1939 Chevrolet trucks.
Uh-huh.
And I still got it.
You still have?
I still got it.
Oh. Still runs?
I made it run last time been a couple of years. I had a spray on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a good old truck.
Yeah. What would you carry up to them? Lumber?
No, see, the boys, they're hauling out to work. Back.
Oh, I see.
Then from this side of the mountain, it was about 7 or 8 men that worked on the drive.
Yeah.
And they wanted the trucks to come this side of the mountain to haul them up there to work.
Mm-hmm.
Then when they got up there, you had to go to the camp and haul those boys out to work and carry them back. And
yeah.
That was the cause.
Well, back to your sawmill that you had, did you feel that in time you would have used up all the trees?
Put on Pine Run?
Mm.
No, I didn't. We didn't cut it hard. We didn't.
Mm.
It's loads of timber up there right now.
Yeah.
Right now, loads of.
Did you make much money with the sawmill?
Yeah, I did all right with it.
Mm-hmm. Because you had to pay the people. There's your phone again. The men to come and work. How many did you have normally working for you in a day? Would you say about 3 or 4?
Yeah, that's see, we cut 1 week, stay wood, and load the yard and saw the next week.
I see.
See, that's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple of cutting and a couple of dragging it on the ground, you know, and on the log wagon.
Yeah.
And of course, in the mill, taking about 6 to run the steam mill, running right. Because we were sawing anywhere from 8 to 14,000 staves a day.
Oh. Would you sell those staves then?
To the barrel makers that made apple barrels. I sold Home Atkins 600,000 staves 1 year, and he made 60,000 apple barrels.
Oh.
60,000. And he was the biggest barrel maker in the county, but we had 3 or 4 more barrel makers in the county. And a lot of orchardists made their own barrels, had them made right then. I'd sell them staves. That book will show you how I sold George Wood and Willie Wood and John Kaiser and and Sneeds, and different ones stayed. See, they had their own cooker.
Yeah.
To make your own bath.
You had to cook for these people, so you had to feed them.
Well, we had three or four that would come in, you know, from lived right that close. I mean, get seen Floyd Seal and Kellis Smelson and some of these Frasers. See, they just walked. They didn't have over a mile to walk.
Oh, right, yeah.
But the ones that I bought was from Browntown and Lula Page County.
Well, did you pay them less because you had to feed them, or?
Well, there was more of a special. Now, the Sawyer, old man, the judge from over at Luray, Bow Brick Church, he sawed for us for a long time on a sawmill. And I'd go get him, and I'd take him back. I'd go get him on Monday morning and take him back, because we worked for Friday night or Saturday at 12 o'clock. Depends on if we worked 5 days and a half, 5 days a week, and then I'd take him home.
I get it, yeah.
But from Browntown, they would walk across the mountain.
Did you have any trouble with these that stayed overnight?
No.
They never got drinking or anything of that kind?
They
never started drinking or anything?
No, indeed. No, I had no trouble with them drinking.
Uh-huh.
This fellow I was telling you about, one morning it was pretty cold. And I had I didn't have a push, but I had a platform come out of the front door about 6 by 8 or something. And old man Clatterbuck got up that morning real soon and walked out and hollered, Wee, y'all get up. Said, God damn, says, all poor son of a bitch, you can drink ice water this morning.
Yeah, I guess it did get pretty cold up there, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, it was cold in the wintertime.
Yeah. And you continued working in the winter?
Well, if we had a lot of logs down, well, we'd drag them in the snow, you see.
Oh, yeah.
So it's pull easy.
Did you use horses for that?
Yeah, I didn't have anything but horses.
Right.
Well, no, we didn't have any tractors in the same year, 1927, 8, and 9. That was before the Depression, and we didn't have anything like that.
Yeah.
We had no power saws, it was all crossbow saws and axe.
Sure. That was a lot of work, wasn't
it? Sure was.
Yeah. You would then, as you say, you worked from 4 in the morning until
10 o'clock at night, a lot of night. Because after I finished my supper dishes, in 29, I'd bring out a load of staves down here, you see, and deliver them. Before that, I hauled them on the wagon. I'd average haul one load a week with my horses. But see, we had two men hauling staves most all the time.
Oh.
Two of them, one of them had a 4-horse team, the other one had a 2-horse team.
Mm-hmm.
They hauled staves to different places.
Sure. Did you ever have any time with the mountain people? Did you ever visit in their homes?
Yeah, sure.
Tell us about it.
Well, I used to go to a man, Bailey's up there, right below the number 12 camp. And I go up there hear the old man talk. Bobby Bailey. Now, of course, they made a little whiskey, and he had a couple of sons. He lived in the house that old Dr. Kelly moved out. There were two houses there. And one Sunday, we was up there, and they wanted to have another fellow myself, and wanted to have dinner with them. And I didn't think I could eat what the old woman cooked, so she had some onions come out of the garden. I said, "Well, all I want is an onion." I said, "I'll eat an onion." And so old Dr. Kelly, you know, he left a lot of goats up there. I mean, he left. He's in the goat business. I mean, the mountain was full of goats. And this fellow Sam Bailey's son, they all left home one Sunday. And Sam said when they come back, there's a goat in the house. And he said he done eat the Bible up and gone upstairs and said, going up the steps, you know, it had the bridle, the saddle hanging up on the stairway going up the steps. And he says, by God, he said, I found out that goat eats the Bible up, said I got that bridle, and said I knocked the hell out of that goat. Said I killed him with the word of God in him. Killed him with the word of God in him.
Was he able to read?
Well, tell you the truth, I don't know. He was one of the on the dumb side because they caught him making liquor. And they had him in the camp. Had him in the camp up there at Beach Spring when he'd be on the road, 211. And Captain Mix, Captain Mix of the camp. And he was a trusted now. He didn't have much time to pull, you know. And he went in what they called the corner store, Schwarzer store at that time. And it's just a big long room and two back rooms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he went in that, the biggest store he ever seen in his life. He went in there and almost got lost.
Oh.
But he told the truth. That's where he saw it, you see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just wondering if he was with the Bible, if he was able to read it.
I imagine old man Bobby could read the Bible, and she could too. Her name was Bill.
Bell?
Bill, and Bell Bailey, and Bobby Bailey.
Did you know anything about how they did their courting?
No, can't see how they
were very modest about it. I think they would go and hang around with the men folks, you know, and hang around. She'd come around, so you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very modest affair.
Yeah. And their weddings were very simple, weren't
very
they?
Very simple, but, yeah.
Yeah.
But meaningful. And then they would have this feast just like a lot of other people did.
Uh-huh. You know, there is one story that I have been told, and now you have disproven it. And that was that all they ever made in the northern section was wine.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
No, they made whiskey.
They made very little wine, if any, did they?
Huh?
They made very little wine, if any.
I didn't know much they made much wine, but they made whiskey. They made pure grain whiskey, a lot of them. They didn't put any sugar in it.
Mm-hmm.
Brandy.
Mm-hmm. Apple brandy.
Apple brandy. They made brandy, and when they made grain liquor, they sprouted the barley and used it. Add the sprout on and then dry it and have it ground, and it's just sweetest sugar.
Yeah.
They made the malt the way they made it.
Mm-hmm. Would they, were there any special areas that would make this, like any particular hollows, like Hickerson Hollow or?
Well, around here, everybody saw the Hazel. Hazel mine.
Mm-hmm.
The ones on the Hazel got the best liquor from the Hazel.
Uh-huh.
Nichols Hollow, of course, depending on the look of Nichols Hollow, too.
Oh, yes, I know.
You know this hollow, too?
Oh, I see. But
which hollow is this?
The Swindler Hollow, and then they called it Sycamore Hollow and Hall Hollow. You see, they spread it all from it.
Sure, uh-huh.
And Fraser Hollow.
Mm-hmm. And they made it there, hmm?
Well, they all made
all
it.
Made, all these mountain people made it.
Oh, they all made it.
Where would they sell it?
Well, lots of times it didn't. It was used as medicinal or for their own pleasure, you know. Some of them sold it. They didn't all sell it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But see, there's still houses, you know, before the it was legal, you know.
Sure.
I mean, when they run the still houses, so there's a lot of still houses.
Yeah.
There's one up this hall and one over at home, where that old home place over there, the old Woodruff made whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
In the storehouse, the old storehouse by the store is in, old man Eddie Clark had on up there, Jimmy Swindler's. He had a still out.
All right.
Well,
see,
now they
know.
He had a still out.
There's one thing I want to make clear about. They did not sell it to the people going to the church up there on Sunday. One of the ladies here, and the new people here in the county, wrote this thing that he made liquor, and then on Sunday he'd go up and sell it to the brethren. And boy, they were furious. They were really sure.
No, of course they didn't do that.
No. They did. Well, of course, if somebody won something, went down and got it, but he didn't take it to the church.
No.
Because he was, I guess, he was a very fine old man.
Mm.
And a very prosperous one.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
He owned land all the way.
Did they go to church regularly?
Sure.
Most of them did, yes, indeed.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
How about when they did their apple butter boiling? Did they have any fun with that?
Oh, sure they did.
Did they do it at daytime or night?
Night.
They put it on early in the morning, around 4 o'clock in the morning, and then didn't come off till around 10 o'clock that night.
The sometimes be later than that.
Yeah.
And did they have any eating while they were,
yes.
And drinking and dancing?
Oh, yes.
They did?
Yes. It was fun thing.
Yeah, that was
great. I've been getting the wrong story.
That was a great thing for them.
Well,
that was about a boy.
You know, even we down here to be invited to somebody's help at one, it was great fun. Mm-hmm. Oh,
sure.
You felt real proud of it, they'd ask you.
That's right, yes.
And of course, you were.
Did they do
bite.
Dancing?
Well, they danced in the on the way. It wasn't all. You know, it wasn't in the same formal.
No, but it was sort of like carving,
yeah,
wasn't
well,
it?
Well, jigging.
Jigging, yeah.
Something like that.
And
yeah.
They play music, fiddles,
oh, yes,
and
yes.
Banjos.
And guitar, yeah. Had all that, and harp. And it was fun.
Sure it was.
But there was no, there's one thing I want to say about the mountain people. You know, we ran the cabin for a number of years. And they were the most decent things, Marla, I've ever seen. They come there. I was never afraid of them. I was never afraid to ride back in the mountains. I rode all the time, and I was never afraid. They were. What the hell do I want to say? But they were strong on honor, on personal honor and dignity. And you never felt that you were going to be insulted.
All right.
You never felt that.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They were very hospitable people,
very.
Too. Yes. They were, they never locked anything. You never,
no.
They never stole,
no.
They never cheated.
Well, you know, they say a lot of them came in here, they were Haitians. Of course, there were a lot of English, too. There were an awful lot of English. Most of them on this side of the mountain were English,
mm-hmm.
of English descent.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, I guess they would go back just as far as mine, anybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were very good people.
Yeah.
And I have heard it said that the reason this name Atkins got started, see we have so many,
yeah.
You know, in England, the Tommy Atkins,
mm-hmm.
the soldier,
mm-hmm.
well, you see, they just took that name. They say, now, I don't know, no one has ever proven it, but it's possible.
Ah, yeah, it is possible. Tommy Atkins, uh-huh. right. Mm-hmm.
Well, you take the accident of the Nicholas Band guys are still there.
Yeah.
They
well,
talk. They
the
talk.
Nickels,
the carvings too. They talk just like they did by gosh, maybe 200 or 300 years ago.
Have you any recollection of any of the statements that they would make that would sound that way?
Pete Nichols and Paul Nichols.
Well, you
no.
know, how did they talk? What were some of the expressions?
Oh, they just talked long.
But you know, those Nicholsons and Colbins are some of the finest families.
That's right.
England.
That's right.
And they still, they have beautiful hands.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these Atkins have beautiful hands.
Mm-hmm.
Just beautifully shaped hands.
Mm-hmm.
And their facial structure is very good.
Very British.
Not very.
Yes.
Very
yes. Well.
They see over on the other side of the mountain, I think it's a little different. I mean, you don't have the same. Don't
Yankee face.
Mr. Yankee did quite a bit of work on the people here in the county, and that's what he said. He had a book on it, and then when they had the sale, I tried to find it to buy it, but someone had moved it or it was gone.
Uh-huh.
But he had written quite a bit on these mountain people.
Yeah.
But I remember him saying that's possibly where they got the name, or they did get the name.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the northern section had quite a number more English than most of the
yeah.
other areas.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know why,
yeah.
but they did.
Yeah.
But you know, all through here, most of these people are English, Scotch. Scotch
yes.
English, you know.
Do you know how they, when they bought supplies from the store, did they pay cash for it, or were they given credit? Like
yeah.
if they took things
yeah.
down, like eggs.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my dad would take anything you had to sell.
Yeah.
And if they, in a sawmill man, if he had some lumber, he'd buy lumber. He'd have chickens and eggs and butter and water kernels, dried cherries, dried blackberries,
would
anything.
Would he give them cash?
He
or credit?
My dad was the first store around this neighborhood that paid cash. The rest of them had
credit.
Bill bills.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, bogus money, you know what I'm
yeah,
talking
about. Right.
Some of them wanted to do bills, but he never did have any of that bogus money. He'd write them a credit slip.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had a lot of that.
Uh-huh. So your father had a store.
He was a... Yeah.
Where was it?
It's up there where he started out, the store up there where Pete lives, right there at the store. Usually the store right there across the bridge, right beside the mill.
And then he had one down
there. And one down in Sparrow.
Oh, boy. So they bring dried cherries, you said, too?
Yeah, dried cherries.
This is from the northern section?
Yes.
Chestnuts bag ash by the four horse wagon load.
What would he do with the chestnuts? Send them to the city?
Oh, he'd dried apples. He shipped them to Baltimore and Philadelphia.
Yeah.
In Richmond.
They were hauled to Culpeper by wagon.
Oh.
And then they'd go and he had regular,
sure. You take a covered wagon, 28 cooks of chicken is all you could get on a wagon at one time. 28 cooks.
Oh, yes, right.
And I hadn't been for chickens on at one time, I'd leave out a frozen stiff just to heat some more chicken. That's the truth.
True.
You had no idea. If you had a covered wagon and had it brought up in front like that and had about the hole about that big, feed trough swung across the back, a hole about that big, and you climb up that feed trough and poke your head in, man, it'd be warm, but heat comes in those chickens.
Yeah.
That's right.
Do you know anything about their use of herbs?
Oh, yes.
What ones did they use?
Well, there's a list of them that long, but I couldn't tell them. Now, his great-grandmother
was a herb doctor.
Well, she, you know how there weren't very many doctors, so people would call on her. They used cherry bark. Now, you have to see.
Wild cherry bark.
What for?
Cough medicine.
Yeah, it was cough medicine.
They'd make a tea out of it,
sort of? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they made catnip tea. Hoehound tea.
What for?
Don't let's go so fast. Hoehound tea was for cold. Catnip was for your stomach, I think, as well as I remember. They'd make a poultice and put it on your stomach. And then there was sassafras tea.
That was just for pleasure, wasn't it?
Oh, no. That was to thin your blood out in the spring.
Oh.
And then there was calamus. The calamus grew all around in here.
And what did they use that for?
That was used
that's for stomach.
For your stomach or liver, you know.
A tea again?
Well, yes, I think so. Yeah, I'm sure.
Well, they had sassafras tea, spicewood tea.
Spicewood tea, I think, was more for pleasure, though, wasn't it?
Spicewood tea. They give you spicewood tea to, if you had to meet, it makes you break out.
Yeah, that's right.
To break your fever, huh?
Yeah.
Oh boy. Now.
What's the old Colonel name from Baltimore that comes up there sometimes? He's up here at number one camp.
Oh,
Captain
Noah. You know him, I'm sure.
You know Captain Noah?
Yeah.
Well, boy, you pay you to talk to him. And I can tell you another man pay you to talk to.
Yeah.
Oh man, E.A. Cave, he lives over by Stanley, up in there somewhere.
I did. The other day.
A good day. He's one of the nicest old men I've seen.
He is wonderful, and his wife is adorable.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He didn't tell you this, though. Now, the Eunice Smith was a nurse in the county. Where is she from?
She's from Alabama.
One of the southern states. Anyway, she's a nurse in the county for a long time. And she had Madison too, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she had this patient in Madison. I don't know if it was a woman or a man. I believe it was a woman. And she'd been in the bed so long, they'd take her back as far as the hospital. But she'd been in the bed so long, she had a bed so long, they couldn't cure it up. In Charlottesville, nothing couldn't cure it up. Old man came and said, I ain't telling you what to do for him. I think he got the step. He said he should get some damage yielding bomb and boil it and water and boil it down and put that on that and chew that damn thing up. Bammy Gillen, he says it wasn't but one or two places.
Yeah, he talked about Bammy Gillen. All right. And I don't know what Bammy Gillen is.
It's a tree.
It's Balm of Gilead. That's what it is when you look it up.
Balm.
You see, Balm of Gilead. And
well, that's what the old town people call it that.
Well,
I know where it is, but it's in the park. But it's over there below Red Gate, in that where he was born and raised.
Yeah, right.
Did he tell you the story about being snowed in one winter? Or snow on top of the windows and everything.
No.
Boy, that's some kind of story. This is true. They couldn't get out, they couldn't move, nothing. They had to tunnel out to the barn in the snow. And then when the snow did leave, they had a little church over there somewhere, and one of their kids died. And after they got so they could bury it, kept moving shoulders around that. They taken one of the benches and made a coffin and buried this little child. Oh. You ought to get him to tell you that story. Yeah. I mean, it's true. He said the horses in the stable and they need to be fed and they couldn't get out. Had to tunnel the way out. That was, he'd tell you what year it was, what when it was and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He was a nice one.
Oh, I had such a nice time with them. Mm-hmm. They're great. So that's it, Balm of Gilead.
Balm of Gilead, that's what that
was it.
I looked it up because we did a program on, and we have a friend here in the county, Flossie Williamson, do you know Mrs. Williamson? Well, she's having an herb sort of to do for about 2 days, yeah, this coming week, Friday and Saturday, and so everybody's invited. And she shows you how to use herbs, and she says OP, and she uses it all the time. And she's right much older than I am, and she looks like she's about 50. She eats all these herbs all the time because they're so good for as food, you know.
Yeah.
And they have a medicinal value. She's already found out what some were quassia herbs and some were these from the. Well, now those mountain people knew that.
They
I don't
did.
Know all of them.
That's why it's now they're discovering that these herbs did
that's
the
right,
things that the people said.
Well, you see,
do you know what they did for like? Did they use ginseng for anything?
Yes. Just about like the Chinese use it. They use it for all these things.
Yeah.
And yara was used as a, it's not for hemorrhoids. I
oh,
that.
Would they make a poultice then?
I guess they would. I just don't know.
Uh-huh.
But I think they would.
Uh-huh.
And then they use part of the egg, of the skin, of the lining of the egg to put on a boil. I'm trying to think of all these things. And they use the flax seed to put in the eye, you know, if there was something in your eye.
Oh.
Put a flax seed in and run it out.
Yeah, it would chase it out. Now you think of some of the things that they use. And of course, you know they cook with pork salad. They always, these wild.
Oh, those are good.
Oh,
I do too.
I do too. I get a red. Charles says, I know you're going to kill me. This narrow leaf dock, I just love it. You know, it tastes all like spinach, only better.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I know you're
going
to kill me. What did you say that in mercury?
Too much nitrate in it.
Nitrate, oh, that's not going for just.
I have heard that they used kerosene and sugar for a cough.
For cough or for most anything.
They did do it?
Yeah,
oh,
they did.
Yes,
yeah, they used
the
kerosene and sugar.
And a drop of turpentine. Now, I know that because I almost had pneumonia one night, and this cook said, well, I can fix you up, Doc. He's not in much shape to give you anything. So he put 2 or 3 drops of turpentine on sugar, and that broke up this chest cold just overnight. You're not supposed to take turpentine, you know, because of your kidneys.
I know it.
But it broke the pneumonia. Yes, they use kerosene all the time, and of course this didn't happen here, but these parents went away one time and left the kids alone, and a rattlesnake bit one of the children. Well, they didn't know anything but kerosene. So they, instead of just putting a little kerosene on the thing, they gave the child a half teacup kerosene to drink, and it didn't bother, the snake bite didn't bother at all, he got all right, didn't hurt him. isn't that something? But yeah, it's just little simple things like that.
They didn't make a poultice then for
no,
the snake bite.
Well, I think you probably did, yes, but these children just gave him the kerosene to drink.
Now, Mrs. Cave was saying that her.
What was that poultice they used to put on the chest? I want to say asperity, but it wasn't. Asperity was to keep the fleas away and numerous things, you know.
Oh.
But there was some kind of poultice. Yes, they put a poultice of asperity on you in the wintertime. You smelled so horrible. Was it?
Mustard. With mustard poultice.
Well, I know you used to make this thing.
Didn't they use onions and cornmeal?
Oh, yes, onions and cornmeal, anything that would draw.
Yeah.
And then they would boil up this concoction of onions and hoham and a little sugar. And it was a gooky, nasty looking mess. And you drink that and it would cure your cold. It would upset your stomach, but it would certainly cure your cold.
Hoham,
onions, and sugar.
Onions and sugar.
This is a horrible mess. I tried it one time because I was about to end with the cold, but it suddenly broke it up.
My father got this old woman to make him a wild cherry bark medicine. I don't know, several years before he died, but he used it in wintertime. He had to eat to take the bottles, you know, and she made it, it looked like cherry glycerin, to tell you the truth. And it tastes something like cherry glycerin. Have you ever tasted cherry glycerin?
Yeah.
Cherry glycerin was a cough medicine, you know.
Uh-huh.
But he liked that wild cherry, and it did him a lot of good. He took a lot of wampoles at one time, my daddy did. Mm-hmm. But he lived till he was 92 years old.
Well, they really did know how to use those herbs correctly.
Sure.
And you wonder how they learned it. Where did the Indians help
them? No, they brought it here with them. Well, of course, the Indians used the herbs too. You know, they learned a lot from them. But they brought a lot of those ideas here from England.
Mm-hmm.
Because even back as far as I can remember, when you were sort of puny, you know, they used to say, they would make you chicken broth. And mm-hmm. and that's an old remedy. And now they say, well, try chicken soup. You know, if you don't feel good, eat chicken soup.
That's right.
Yeah.
The Caves were telling me that one of their children got a snake bite, and they took a chicken,
split it open,
and put it over it.
That's right. It was rather poisonous.
Yeah.
You tear it open. You don't split it. You tear it open with your hand, because I saw this colored woman do it.
Uh-huh.
She just pulled the chicken right open and put it right on the snake bite.
Yeah, they said, well, it was still alive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it was live. She just snatched up a chicken, and it was one of her kids, and she snatched up a chicken and tore it on like that and put it on that, and it turned green like that.
Yeah.
It was horrible looking. Of course, we were kids, and we were very impressed.
I can believe it. Yeah.
And that chicken like
that. Did you have any problem with snakes while you were doing all the work you were doing?
No, we killed a lot of rattlesnakes on fine run, but we never had anybody get bit by any.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it was all mountain men and you what you're doing, you see, even
because
I'd rather run up on a rattlesnake and a cobblehead anyway.
Yeah.
A rattlesnake would rattle an old cobblehead, he'd live right there in the basin.
Sure, yeah.
But we kill sometimes 3 or 4 or 5 a week.
Wow.
I've seen rattlesnakes that big. I saw a rattlesnake kid was bigger than my fist one time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was killed up there at Beach Spring, like that the dump.
Gee.
Behind the Beach Spring church.
Oh, boy.
That's when he shot him, and he saw him, went home, got his shotgun, and shot him.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there was, getting back to the churches, there was a little church and a school too on top of Hazel Mountain.
Yeah, so
it was.
There was a church and a school too right up on the mountain, wasn't it?
It sure was.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, of course, you know, it was a very plain little church, had benches in it, but it was there, and they attended church.
Was it any particular denomination?
I don't remember that.
Most of them didn't seem to be. Do you know anything about their funerals? How did they do their funerals?
You should turn that off and I'll tell you. Then you can ask him. They were very emotional things.
Yeah.
They would scream and cry and moan and go on to great places.
Did they keep the body in the house?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it never went inside. Never went to a funeral.
No.
Never was embalmed.
Never embalmed.
No.
Did they make their own caskets?
Yes.
They did.
They coffered, they called.
Mm-hmm. In the shape of the body?
Yeah.
Yes, so this,
the Sparrow had a disease business of making caskets and coffins and either wagon. Made wagons, grain cradles, and any kind of woodwork.
Mm-hmm.
But these people up in the mountains, a lot of them made their own.
Did they then all stay right at the grave until it was
completely
filled?
That's right.
Completely done, then they stay there and pile on, and then that's why they go on. But it was truly, I've been to several funerals, you know, of course you did. And when they have someone in the house to preach it, and it was just terribly emotional. Even the kids and the old people, they'd all just...
Aww.
And when there was a battle amongst them, and the gentlemen folks got to fight and carry on, the women and children would go through that same emotional thing. They would scream and cry and do that, because they poured John and prayed. But now I'll tell you right now, some of the fights, the women fought right along with the men. Because I remember... down at that sale at White Rock. Yes, you were there. This one woman, this big, every now and then a mother would walk up and basically she thought her side was losing. Yeah, they were both taking part in. Because they were very loyal to that.
I think the family unit was a very, very
close thing.
Very wonderful thing, yes. Their homes weren't that close together, were they?
Not too close, no.
No. Mm-hmm.
But now, when they butchered, that's one of the last sites I remember on the old dirt road going down the little way. This old child and I had to go to the way for something, I'd pick up some cattle or something. This old woman was going down the road with a butcher knife in her hand. We stopped and picked her up, and she was going down to our neighbor's to get the butcher. It was early in the morning, frosty, cold morning. We felt so sorry for her. She was going down the mountain.
Uh-huh.
And they all did. They went and had their neighbor.
Sure. Yeah, the butchering was quite a time.
Well, that was another fine time. They all got together, and it was nice.
Yeah. Did they hold many dances?
Not as we call dances.
No,
no.
How about Christmas? What was that like?
Well, it was probably just one toy for the child.
Really? They did have
a toy? Yeah, they observed Christmas, and of course there was a lot of drinking at Christmas.
Yeah.
But not as we celebrate Christmas.
No.
But they observed Christmas.
Firecrackers?
Well, I don't know about that. I never saw any. Did you ever see them?
Oh, well, Joe did buy firecrackers, and my dad never did sell in the firecrackers, but you could buy them. I mean, as I could remember. But he sold a lot of glass and dishes. And what they call carnival glass now, he sold it for 15, 20, quarter of a buy a great big bowl, you know. They call it carnival glass now, being $50, $100, being more dollars did pennies then, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But did buy a lot of that stuff at Christmas time.
So then they really did give gifts.
Oh,
yeah. They always, a lot of them would give the kids something on Christmas and New Year's too.
There's where the North is entirely different from the rest of the area.
They didn't give things. Oh, yeah, they
upset. Yeah. I heard them say it, and that I can remember 65 years ago myself.
Mm-hmm.
So they,
we remember well. And that little cabin you have built up there at the bird shelter, you know?
Yeah.
That's just exactly right. Whoever did that knew exactly what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Even the old rag lying on the bouncer on the front porch. Now, whoever made that thing had been there.
Uh-huh.
Because
yeah.
It was just
typical. They had a big deal up there
at 20.
It's
buried.
That's a number.
Mm-hmm.
A big matter.
Yeah.
They're putting up his portrait in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I saw it in the paper.
Yeah.
It's a 20th, I think.
Did you say you knew Harry Bird?
Sure I did.
And young Harry?
Well, little Harry, he's one of two of the best statesmen that the United States, by God, ever had.
Yeah, we can't have any politics on this.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah,
we're so lucky to have a...
Little Harry Bird, he was a wonderful person, Harry Bird was.
Mm-hmm, right.
Of course, at different times where Little Harry had come along and here. But I think he come along and know Little Harry was independent instead of Democrat, he's ready to Arizona.
Your grandchildren may be interested in this. I think that if it hadn't been for Harry Bird, we would not have had the park.
That's right.
Mm. How do you think the people were able to adjust after the park came in? Did they have a hard job?
Some of them did.
Mm-hmm. Where did most of them move to?
Well, they didn't stay on these resettlement things. They all didn't cook.
Uh-uh.
But now we have this little friend that was raised back in the 90s. People all before him were born back there. He was born back there. And right now, he has a son in college. And he's educated all of his children. And he has a job at that, what do you call that bank down there in the mountain?
Federal Reserve Bank. It's up on the Mount Pony.
And he's a big boy down there now. And his wife is just as nice as she can be. Just love it. And they have a camping. They go camping weekends. They go to the beaches. They do everything else. But now, you see, that wouldn't have happened. So it's in the long run, they may not think so, and I might say another thing, but I guess it's better.
Well, I haven't interviewed anyone yet who didn't say that they would go back if
they could.
Yeah. I think the older people, you know, missed it. It was terrible. And of course the thing of letting them stay there and go. But there were some that, you know, they just saw the fell to pieces. They couldn't manage out here like that.
That's right, yeah.
But then the next generation did.
Mm-hmm.
They kept moving right on.
They did.
And some of the best students now, last year I had these essays for the kids to write, you know, the DAR does this thing once a year, you know. And the best essays that I got from out of that kind of school were little genuine essays and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They were the only ones that I came in because they were best.
Yeah.
And I was so pleased to think that they had, you know, just gotten right in there and gone ahead.
That's it, yes. Something about their readjustment. I know that they didn't stay pretty much because they didn't like living so close to each other. That was,
yeah.
I think, one of the main things.
Well,
they didn't like.
I think they felt naked.
Yeah.
There were no trees around, and then just everything was all out and just too wide open. You know,
yeah.
They just felt like they and missed fields. You know, they missed the mountains.
Sure.
I think they missed them terribly.
One old fellow back up in here, the holler here, was a fellow Dwyer. Boot Dwyer, every time you see him, especially me and a lot of other people too, they knew. He said, "Tala, have you heard anything about the pirates?" So, you know, he wanted to find out everything. You wanted to find out what was happening, you know.
Sure.
Every time you see me, I ask you that.
Yeah.
He talked just like I said.
Uh-huh.
His mouth was on the side. I don't know how come his mouth was all around him. And he said, anyway, his daughter lives up to great grandmother's place now, back up in the mountains.
Did they allow their cattle? Now they had cattle up there.
Yeah, they did.
And hogs.
And sheep.
And sheep.
Yeah.
And goats, you mentioned.
Well, Dr. Kelly brought the goats in here. Now the native Bone Mountain people, they didn't have goats, Charlie.
No, they didn't have.
No, goats. Dr. Kelly brought the goats in here.
Well, now did they let them all just run wild?
Okay.
Yeah.
And they were marked a certain way, just like they said in Foxfire. They were, that Foxfire number one book is very good.
It is good,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So they would have them marked.
They would have them marked, and he knew that was his cow, and you knew it was his cow, and you didn't take it.
Did they eat beef?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, they killed their own beef.
They killed
their
own
hogs,
everything. Well, everybody did. Over here, you know, all the farmers, you killed beef every fall after it turned cold. Well, the amount of people did the same thing.
Uh-huh.
And they could cure the best pork, ham. Their hams are just delicious.
Mm-hmm.
And they ate them. Of course, they didn't bake them and dress them all for you, but they would fry them. And
yeah.
They were good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. They did. They ate very well. Their vegetables.
Oh, yeah.
They dug trenches to keep them in the winter, do you know?
Well, they had a lot of them in down in front of the fireplace, a little pit like, and they put sweet potatoes in there. I've seen that in the houses down here, in certain rooms, maybe the kitchen, they'd have a pit in front of the fireplace with sweet potatoes in there.
Mm.
But they buried the potatoes in the winter.
Cabbage.
And buried cabbage and of course turnips, that was it. And then they dried apples and they dried beans, and that's where we get the leather bridges, you know. They snapped
right.
The beans, dried them, and snapped them and dried them, and strung them on strings, you see. And they were called leather bridges.
That's why the song Leather Bridges.
Yeah, that's what
it
is. I did a log cabin for one of the tours we had, and I did all these things. I went up in the mountain and found all these things, you know, the old gourd that they put the eggs in. And
what did they do with that?
That's where they kept the eggs. They'd go out to the house and get the eggs and bring it in and put it in the old gourd. It was a big old lamb fat gourd, usually, you know, top cut off and came in there. Yeah, that was the egg container.
Ah. Have you any idea how that tune Leather Britches goes?
No, I don't. I haven't been playing.
Have you any idea?
No, I can't say
that. But now you could find it somewhere, I'm sure.
How about Money Mush? I heard that they...
Money Mush.
Money Mush.
I don't remember what to call Money Mush, but it had mush. Now, people down here ate it too. Mush.
You don't even mean a song.
Oh, no, I don't know that. But they ate a lot of mush.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. You see, you could make a pot of mush and feed a whole lot of kids in there.
Sure.
That would be made out of cornmeal.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Just cornmeal and salt.
Yeah.
And if you had the cream to spare, you put cream over it. If you didn't, you didn't. And then another thing that they ate, and another thing that the people down here ate, was when milk would sour and clabber, you know.
Yeah.
They would eat a lot.
cottage cheese. They made cheese. They made it.
Yeah.
They had a cow. They lived good. I'm telling you, most of these mountain people I know, they lived good.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't no
fooling
around.
And they always ask you, if you came to that house at mealtime, they would always ask you to come and have something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Another fellow myself used to ride a lot on Sunday horseback and ride on the Hazel over Nicholas Highland. I'd leave soon in the morning and get back late, you know, and we go from one house to the other.
How would you get there?
Horseback.
Oh, horseback.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Joe Johnson, myself.
Yeah.
We used to go to Nicholas Hollis, old, Amos Nicholas and Andy Nicholas, their brothers. They cut logs for me up on Pine Run for about a week. But they didn't know anything about it. They ran the timber. They would cut it, you know, and it would fall and split up and everything. So I told them that. I said, y'all, especially the oak, you just ruin it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I said, y'all gonna do better than that. I said, I just can't teach it.
Yeah.
So I had to let them go. But Brass Nichols was the father, I think. We was back there one Sunday and went in and the house, they had a shade room on it, right? Come down to a roof like this, you know, and come down and had the cook stove, a little stove in there, and they had a big pot of beans on the stove. And of course, it was ready to eat. And the hams and shoulders hanging on the side of the wall, you know. And they had plenty of eggs. And Joe, he's a good cook, too. Joe said he knew him just like he was busy his brother, you know. He liked them mountain people. And he eat the beans. I said, Joe, I said, if you're going to cook anything, I said, fry me a couple of eggs and a piece of that meat. I said, that's all I want.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I don't believe I care for any beans. And he did. But Joe Johnson, he's the one that left here and went down to North Carolina taking over the damn plot land. Did you know
that?
He could really get along with people. He went down there and got along with them and lied to them and everything else. I know he did. Thought he couldn't talk with that line.
Well, it's too bad you couldn't have gotten him before he died.
Mm. He did.
He really knew more about these mountain people than anybody I know.
All down in south of the National Park.
Yeah. On down in North Carolina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes, he had died. He went down there, by gosh, and got them people to agree with all this and that and the other.
And sign up to sell the property.
Yeah. Did you know Skipper Noise?
Yeah, I recognize
him. That's who we talking about, Father.
Skipper Noise.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's who he asked.
I tell you, Captain Noise.
We call him
he was a head shot of the number one.
Isn't he a great fellow?
I reckon he is.
Well,
the whole thing, he's in bad shape now.
Really?
Yeah. He was up here last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's coming again this summer, folks.
Yeah.
What's his wife's name? Oh,
she. Oh, I can't, but she's poor thing.
Well,
both of them.
Both old.
Well, he's got a very bad heart.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. And she's
the whole thing. He was eating a piece of beef sandwich. What was he eating? He got choked. And I felt so sorry for him.
Oh,
that's a Virginia.
Yeah.
See, Snippy Miller, he was a.
He was with the CC for a while. Did you ever know Snippy?
No.
Well, he was there too,
one
as a foreman.
Well, he's a foreman. He said he was a foreman.
Mm-hmm.
But Kevin Noyes was, he was head of the rest of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I
think Skipper is one of the finest men I know.
He
really went into those mountain homes.
Yeah,
yeah, he was nice fellow.
And they liked him too.
Right.
That's right. Well, he's a bird. What is his wife's name? Oh,
that's right. I can see her face right now.
I can too.
Margaret.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Oh, I have learned so much about it.
We used to go up there to dances.
Look,
see.
Can I fix you a little drink? I think you'd like a little drink just as well as we do. And a chicken sandwich and a cup of tea. Would you do that? And then you could run along and you finish.
We're not through yet, are we?
Well, no. But I could do this and you all could sort of eat while you.
Well, you're very.
And he owned this land on Pine Run. So Cliff Bailey and Jim Bailey, Lou Ray, they was in the pulpwood and stay business too, you know. And he tried to sell the land to them. I mean, the timber to them. They offered him 75 cents, $1,000 put on the stump.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd in 1927. I went up in 26 and cut a lot of locusts for him. In 27, I said, Daddy, I said, you loan me $3,000, and I'll give you $1,000 for it on the stump. See? And I take my brother-in-law and his partner, and we went over to Frederick, Maryland, on the other side of Frederick, and talked in French, and bought a bunch of machinery. We bought a stave mill with two saws and boiling the engine and everything. And I got the picture, Pete got it.
Mm-hmm.
All of the pictures here now, Pine Run River, I got all the pretty fishing holes,
mm-hmm.
Pictures of them. And the falls and the, everything. I got three or four of the prettiest fall pictures of fishing. I caught thousands of trout up there myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't keep anything on it 10 or 12 inches long, but now they won't grow any trout.
Your father's store. Did the people buy shoes?
Yeah, shoes. I reckon they did. I had a brother sold towards the last. They run races in Sparrow selling shoes and see who could sell the most. I forget how many pair my brother sold one Saturday. That was in the fall of the year. He knew in the fall of the year when he was going to buy clothes and shoes. And Robert bet another fellow worked in the store that he was going to sell more shoes than he did. He sold, I don't know, 10 or 15 pairs of shoes.
Did you ever hear of anything like grass stockings?
Grass stockings? No. Not grass.
Some people I talked with the other day, they lived under Pocosin Mission. That's quite a ways down near Elkton. And they didn't wear shoes in the summer, but the fellow said his mother would make him some grass stockings in the winter. It would go way up his leg. And he said kept his feet real warm in the snow.
Grass stockings, no. I told you they were different people down that way.
That's right.
You're going to have to fix your own because I wasn't that good.
How did they start their how did they do their gardening?
Well,
they picked the rock up out of it and made stone walls, of course, but they didn't put the rocks around the vegetables.
They didn't put the rocks around in the vegetables, but they put the mulch around there, I mean, litter from the stables or something like that.
Oh, they did use mulch.
Yeah, they used mulch and litter from the stable.
Uh-huh.
You take an old leaf pile and you go get the dirt from around that.
Yeah.
It's been a big pile of leaves for a long time. Why, you get this kind of dirt.
They didn't then, like, put a kernel of corn in between two stones.
No.
I've heard them say right up this hall here that the whole side of the field up there would be looked like all stone.
Mm-hmm.
And said they had to tear dirt to cover the corn up and said the good corn ears as long as you own.
That's it. Then they did it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right up here.
It retained the moisture of the rain and the heat of the sun. Yeah.
The old Baker place. They said they had to carry dirt to cover the corn up.
Did they have many large gardens, like a couple of acres maybe of corn or anything like that?
They called them patches.
Well.
Called
them
what?
Patches.
Well, the beans, a lot of the beans that are raised in the cornfield are called cornfield beans. They climb the stalk. We had a man at Turn Bridge, a fellow Clark, that would raise all these beans and shell them 5 or 6, 10 bushels at a time and put them on a slide and hook a horse to it and pull them to Little Ray to sell them.
Wow.
Slide, that's right. And he shell all those beans.
Wow.
Right above Turn Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
What I said, instead of calling it cornfield, wheat field, oat field, they just say corn patch or oat patch.
Yeah.
They wouldn't say field.
Yeah. That's right, patch. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, they raised buckwheat. They frailed it out, you know, and had it ground, buckwheat flour, I've ground them in.
They flailed it?
They frailed it out with a frail, they call it. And,
they
you know,
did.
Sure. Well, you take orchard grass, and the seed they wanted out, they cut it with a cradle or a reap hook, And they call it the frail it. They frail it out to get the seed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they frail the buckwheat to get the grain so they could make flour out of it.
Sure.
Buckwheat cakes. I've got them in.
Now, this goes back to around 1715 to flail.
Well, you know how buckwheat comes to this country?
No.
Three cornered. It's a three cornered seed. Did you know that?
No.
And buckwheat honey is the bees make honey out of the bloom on buckwheat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit dark, but it's really sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did they make sorghum?
Yeah, we made 2 or 3 barrels of sorghum used to every year.
Really?
My daddy sold it in the store.
Was it a hard job to make it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't too hard a job. It's just, you know, work is work.
Yeah.
Well, they had a man come off the hazel to make it.
Uh-huh.
Well, the Hawkins made my daddy's sorghum, and he made 2 or 3 barrels every year. We plant the sorghum, of course, and strip it and cut the seed off and have it right ready. When you bring your meal in, you hook the horse to the grinder and mash it and grind it up and get the juice out. Well, it's a sorghum meal over at Pete's. It's a pan over there to make sorghum meal.
Really?
That's right. Yeah. And this old man Hawkins used to make it. So it made sorghum all day that day and that night. We had on the table, you know, I had sorghum and of course the hot biscuits and butter and what else we had, that food we had. But that was to finish it up, of course, you know. And my brother says, boy, I'm telling you, this is good molasses. And Mr. Hawkins said, yeah, they are good. They call molasses. They are good. If I didn't make it, says they are good.
Ooh, gee, yes. You know, they don't make it the same way now, do they?
No, I doubt it. No, you take a Mennonite, they make it so it's all, I don't like it.
It's dark.
Well, the best sorghum I got was from Missouri, and the man that owned it and made it, he died, and some of them kept it up.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of dark, but it was real good.
Mm-hmm.
The sorghum. We used to sell a lot over on the road at apple stands.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, well, I thank you so much. You know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to tuck this all to the side. We have a correction to make on the size of the land owned by Charles Estes' father.
James A. Estes.
How many acres was it?
I think it was 265.
And who did the survey?
Did Fred Amos do it or did old Mr. Smith do it?
No, Fred Amos from Luray run the lines so we could cut the timber by it on between the, especially between the Dwyer's and the Estes property. We knew where the line was. Dr. Kelly called you, he had up a wire fence.
Did he really?
He had up a wire fence to turn those goats. He had a American wire fence, through the bank.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's right.
Well,
we knew where the line was on Bernard Bowling's side.
Yeah.
See? Mm-hmm. Because Bernard and Daddy knew where the line was, and so Fred Amos just run is what I remember, just a one line between the bars. That's on the left hand side. It was a pretty long line, I know that.
He was a good surveyor, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He did a lot of surveying for David.
He sure. And he did a lot for the park too.
Yeah. You know what? I told the boy up there at Bird's, what do you call it? This guy at Big Meadow.
Yeah.
This spring. He's one of the best. He laid that style dry ball.
Sure.
Who in the world could have laid that dry ball any better than Fred Amos?
That's right.
I'm telling you, he got those grades and everything. It's just perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you take somebody stumbling through the mountain, by God, and do a job like that.
Yes.
He's got to be recommended.
Yeah.
I'm
right.
Telling you, he's something.
Oh, I'm glad we got that corrected. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that Bradford boy was old Humps boy. What was his name?
I don't know.
You know, he could take a cigarette and lay in his hand like that. and he smoked too many cigarettes. He slapped his hand, that cigarette jumped right in his mouth. But he'd bet you on anything. He liked to play poker or any kind of game, bet on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he got run over on a trestle down at Overhaul.
Mm.
He was drunk, I think. Because Bill Campbell told me. Because I liked the boy.
Mm.
There was two of them boys. What was the other name? I can't give you one of the names.
I don't know.
There was two of them.
But can you think of the names of any of the people who lived up in Hollow? The Baylors, the Bakers, and Yarrow.
Bowen.
Romine.
Yeah.
All of them. I was trying to think of so many of these people who lived up there.
Well, you don't know what you have already done.
Well, good. I'm glad you've been able to help me.
The two of you.
Oh, well, no, I don't know as much. See, I haven't lived here always. I was born over in Fauquier.